You're listening to KNKX, and the story you're about to hear is from our show, Sound Effect. Here's Sound Effect host Gabriel Spitzer.
We're about to meet a woman whose work keeps her perched above the ultimate gray area, the space between life and death. Her name is Queen May Butters.
The first thing people always ask me is, was that the name that my mother gave me? And it was not the name my mother gave me. I just made the whole thing up.
Queen is a writer, and be warned, I had a little cold when I talked to her. Her real career has been as a hospice nurse for about 4 decades. So that means that she cares for people at the end of their lives and helps ease their transition into death. I know, sounds depressing, but if you talk to Queen, she sees it differently. Sure, it's sad, but it's a lot of other things, too.
I think at the beginning of my career, I really felt like death was sort of the thing we were against. And we were all trying to keep death from happening. And now that I've been in this for so long and that death has become such an ordinary part of my everyday experience, I don't see death as the enemy at all. I see it as one of our longest friends that we get to hang around with in life, waiting until we get to have this one experience with each other. But because my work takes me to people's deathbeds, I get the experience over and over and over.
One of the things that you've mentioned is how you wish people would not sort of wait till the very, very end to engage with death.
Ugh.
I don't know. How would you do that?
Well, I think I'm trying to figure that out for myself because I can't just talk about it and wish everyone else would change. I have to come ready to my own death, ready, you know, and so do I go to the extreme of making sure that my dogs are going to be cared for if no one's around and I'm going to be out on the road and I might have a car accident? Do I go that far? Yes, because I have to. I'm forced every day to look at the fact that this could be my last. And that's maybe what they call, what is that, like when your work hurts you? Like, you know, that I don't get to have the illusion.
Occupational hazard kind of thing?
Yeah, like an occupational hazard. Like, I don't get to have the illusion that death won't come to me, you know, until I'm not pretty anymore or something.
Can you tell me about one of those early, I guess, milestones where you started to make that transition from seeing death as the enemy to death as a long friend that you're kind of circling and dancing around with until the end?
Well, I think really my stories are what document that sensation that I was getting in the relationships that I was creating with people who were dying. I was making really good friends. And I think that's when I took a switch from I'm going to save you from your experience to I'm just here to participate with you.
So why don't we, on that note, check out one of your stories, the one that's called Love.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, here's a great story about falling in love at a deathbed. His head rests on the pillow and his eyes look up to the right. I sit down in a hardback chair next to his hospital bed. His sister sits on a couch under the TV mounted on the wall. Hi, Sean, I say. My name is Queen. I'm a nurse sent from home hospice to talk to you and your sister about our services. He nods his head a fraction, but keeps his head pointed away from me. He says in a whisper, Hi, Queen. His sister says he can't move without any pain. That's why he's not looking at you. His cancer has moved into his spine and bones, but his brain is still working fine. His sister starts telling me his history. As I'm sitting next to him, I become aware of his left arm. He has dark hairs running up his forearms. I interrupt his sister and say, Excuse me for one moment. Then I turn to Sean and I say, Do you like touch? I'm wondering if I can touch your arm. He turns his head with monumental effort and looks at his arm. That effort of movement felt like he was giving me a present. I love touch, he mouths, but no sound comes out. He takes his bony fingers and pushes on his Adam's apple. He tries again. This time a little sound comes through. I love touch, he says. I massage his arm, palpating into the muscles of his forearm, touching the black hairs that grow in thick patches. His sister continues to tell me about his history, reporting how he has intractable pain. The pain has improved after switching from morphine to methadone. His sister and I watch as Sean's eyes well up with tears when she mentions his pain. I ask, "Sean, what's on your mind? I see you have tears." He turns his head again. I had moved my hands to his hand when his tears come. I say, "Let's just hold hands for a minute." His hand tightens around mine. His sister and I watch his tears dropping down his cheeks. His blue eyes find the energy to look into mine, and he says, "I love you. I mean it. I love you. You are so kind and sweet." We look into each other's eyes in the basement of this adult family home. Tears start forming at my eyes because his words are poking me where my heart aches, because I was never chosen for the big love we all wait for. Just that morning, I wanted to stay in bed and feel sorry for myself instead of going to work. I say, "You know what? I love you too. I love how fast and brave you are loving like this. It inspires me." I go back to his arm with more rubbing, and with his eyes closed, he moans. I move to his feet and start more rubbing. He is quiet and still. As I rub his feet in silence, my mind takes me to Costco. I see the long aisles of stacked up food. I see myself pushing a big silver groceries cart. I see myself and my cart walking past a healthy Sean. He's tall and handsome with thick, wavy black hair on his head. He is picking up a big flat of blueberries and placing them in his cart. We would walk right by each other as strangers. I leave his feet and sit back down next to him. "Sean, isn't it amazing that I came to work today? And if it wasn't for my work, we would never have met. We could have walked past each other at Costco, stayed strangers and never met, never known we could be touched by each other."
I think there's such a presumption that you have to keep an emotional distance, but this story shows you opening yourself up with such vulnerability. I don't know, how do you manage that? Is that not difficult?
For me, if you had read this story when I first wrote it, I did not write about my own pain. And I realized that I was hiding myself, that I rewrote it so that you could hear what I woke up with. And this guy wouldn't know that who he is could hurt my feelings at Costco, you know, in his beauty and in his grandeur. But it took his vulnerability for him and I to find each other. And I think that's a part of being a hospice person that makes living hard. Not the death part, but the part that I know that these interactions are so precious. And, you know, his time is so precious. So if I waste it talking to him about Netflix, then, you know, we're going to miss that opportunity. And it's very clear to me because of the situation, why I've entered his situation.
This seems like your experiences at the bedsides of these folks are never just one thing. Like, they're not just sad.
No.
Or they're not just joy. They're all so much humanity all kind of mixed up.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I would hope that that's what you would expect from your hospice team, is that they will bring you more life. And what my hope for people is that they come to their deaths with more life in them. And we can get in the habit of taking so many treatments for our conditions that it wears out our life force. So then when we come to this engaging moment, you know, we may not be in our full presence. And my hope, I've seen people come, you know, in a way that I would describe as ready. And I like it.
Well, Queen Mae Butters is a hospice nurse and a writer based here in Seattle. Thanks so much, Queen.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much.